our way out of it. Especially if they know how Leia reacts when one of her family gets in trouble.
You mean like when one of her kids gets kidnapped? Her husband gets beaten to a pulp or something?
Han growled, feeling his face warm.
I didn't mean it that way, Lando protested.
Thanks anyway,
Han said, looking around for inspiration. His gaze fell on a tap calf across the street with a large sign reading, Sabacc Tournament Today, prominently displayed in the privacy-glazed window.
Over there,
he nudged Lando in the tap calf's direction.
You have your slug thrower, right?
Yes, Lando said cautiously. What exactly have you got in mind?
What's the one thing security types can't ever resist?
Han asked.
Especially young cocky ones.
I don't know, Lando said humorously. Working prisoners over?
Han shook his head.
A good commotion,
he said, nodding toward the tap calf.
You take Lobotan to the middle of the place and clear it out. I'll handle the rest.
Right. Good luck.
They made it across the traffic in one piece and went into the tap calf. Inside, it was just as Han had hoped. Large, well-lit, and crowded to the gills with Sabacc players hunched over tables and kibitzers standing behind them gazing over their shoulders. Breaking to the right just inside the door, he sidled around behind a wall of observers as Lando and Lobot worked their way in toward the curved bar bulging out into the room from the center of the left-hand wall. By the time they reached it, Han had managed to work his way out of his scholar's robe, kicking it back out of the way against the wall. He rubbed the sweat off his palms and waited for Lando to make his move.
He didn't have to wait very long.
All right, that's it!
Lando abruptly bellowed, his voice cutting through the low murmur of background conversation like a lightsaber through a block of ice. All heads turned toward the bar and jerked back in shock and fright as the slug thrower blew a gaping hole in the ceiling.
We'll settle this right here and now, you mangy calc brain!
Lando shouted over the echoing thunder crack and a handful of gasping shrieks.
Everybody else out!
It was as unclear to Han as it was to everyone else just who the mangy calc brain was that Lando was referring to. But if the sudden panicked exodus from the room was any indication, no one seemed eager to accept the title. Drinks, cards, and dignity completely forgotten, the whole crowd made a concerted dash for the door. Han let about half of them get past him. Then, shoving his way into the stream, he squeezed through the door and out into the street. He'd been right about the two security men. Their quiet surveillance totally abandoned, they were pushing their way upstream against the crowd toward the sound of the slug thrower shots, their blasters drawn and ready. Elbowing his way crosswise against the flow, Han angled toward them. Concentrating on the tap calf, the first one shoved past Han without a single glance. Han waited until the second was just passing him. Then, grabbing the kid's gun hand, he swiveled on one heel and drove his elbow hard into the other's stomach. The air went out of him in a loud, agonized whoosh that clearly announced he was out of the fight. Unfortunately, the sound also clearly announced trouble to his partner. Even as Han wrenched the blaster from his victim's limp hand, the other security man, still enmeshed by the crowd, turned to see what had happened. The kid was certainly young and agile enough, but he had turned around to his left, which left his blaster out of line for a quick shot behind him. Han, on the other hand, already had his appropriated weapon aimed. With a silent plea for the complete trappings of civilization to be in place here in the Imperial capital, he fired. His plea was answered. Instead of the killing flash of full power blaster fire, the weapon in his hand spat the brilliant blue rings of a stun jolt. The security man dropped like a rock beneath the flow of the crowd, already scattering away from this new threat to their peace and quiet. Brandishing the blaster high, Han leaped over the prone body and dashed back to the tap calf. Inside, the place was deserted. Even the bartender had found somewhere to disappear to.
Not like the old days in the Outer Rim,
Lando commented almost wistfully, stripping off his own scholar's robe with one hand as he kept his slug thrower ready.
Lucky for you, it isn't,
Han reminded him.
On Tatooine or Bengali, there'd have been 15 blasters on you before you got your second shot off. Come on, back door's that way.
Nevertheless, he felt a twinge of regret of his own as the three of them headed for the back of the tap calf. Those had indeed been fine days. Bracing himself, Deesra lifted his eyes from the datapad.
I don't know what to say, Admiral, he said, careful not to overdo the hurt indignation in his voice and expression. I categorically deny all of this, of course.
Of course,
Pelion echoed, his eyes cool and measuring.
I'm sure it's nothing more than a carefully orchestrated smear campaign against you by your political enemies.
Deesra bit down on his tongue in annoyance. That had indeed been the line he'd been planning to run with. Vader take the man, anyway.
I wouldn't go quite that far, he said instead. I have no doubt that at least some of your sources have been sincere. Whatever their motivations or sincerity, though, their information is wrong.
Pelion exchanged glances with Commander Drafe, seated beside him. Patient, knowing glances on both sides.
Really?
Pelion said, looking back at Deesra.
And what do you suggest is the motivation and sincerity of the official trading data Commander Drafe uncovered on Mutalist?
That's Section 15 on the file, Drafe offered helpfully. In case you missed it.
Deesra ground his teeth, looking back at the datapad. Vader, take Pelion and Drafe.
All I can suggest is that someone deliberately planted those numbers, he said.
It was an unbelievably weak defense, and everyone in the office undoubtedly knew it. But even as Pelion opened his mouth to most likely point that out, there was a different tap from across the room, and one of the double doors swung ponderously open. Deesra looked up, ready to scorch the person who'd had the temerity to intrude on a private conversation.
Your Excellency,
Tears said, blinking with nicely underplayed surprise at the sight of the two armed troopers flanking the doorway. Guards Pelion had had the effrontery to bring in here with him.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
No, that's all right, Major, Deesra said. What is it?
I've an urgent message for you, Your Excellency,
Tears said, hesitantly crossing toward the desk, his eyes on Pelion.
From the palace situation room.
Well, let me see it, Deesra growled, waving the other impatiently forward and trying to cover his sudden misgivings.
Tears could just as easily have called down on the comm with news of their spy search. The speaker focus was set so that no one but Deesra could hear. To have come down personally implied that something had gone seriously wrong. Tears reached the desk and handed Deesra his datapad. And something had indeed gone seriously wrong. Enemy spies identified as former New Republic generals Han Solo and Lando Calrissian, plus an unidentified man with cyborg head implant. Subjects were spotted and identified at the corner of Regisin and Corleone, but have broken surveillance and escaped. Capital Security is currently attempting to re-establish contact. Deesra looked up at Tears, saw the hard edge to the Royal Guardsman's eyes.
I don't like getting reports like this, he said darkly. What exactly is the lieutenant doing about it?
They're all working on it,
Tears said.
They seem to be doing their best. Is there a problem?
Pelion spoke up. His question was addressed to Deesra, but his eyes and his attention were clearly on Tears.
Perhaps you'd like to see to it personally.
Deesra ground his teeth again. Yes, he very much wanted to see what was going on up there. But Pelion wouldn't have offered to let him squirm off the hook, even temporarily, unless he had some devious plan of his own in mind. He suppressed a smile as it struck him. Of course, Pelion wanted the chance to pull a quick private interrogation on Tears, and was trying to get the Moff out of the way.
and it was now equally clear that the hope of dangling that precise bait in front of him was precisely Tyrce's reason for delivering the message personally.
"Thank you, Admiral," Deesra said, getting to his feet. "I believe I will. Major Tyrce, perhaps you'll keep the Admiral and his party company until I return."
"Me, sir?"
Tyrce asked, giving the visitors a simple-minded, wide-eyed expression.
"Why, certainly, sir, if the Admiral doesn't mind."
"Not at all,"
Pellion said softly.
"I'd be delighted."
"I'll be back soon," Deesra promised. "Enjoy yourselves, both of you."
30 seconds later, he was back in the Situation Room.
"What in the name of Vader's teeth happened?" he demanded.
"Calm yourself, Your Excellency,"
Thrawn said, his eyes flashing warningly at Deesra.
"We've only lost them temporarily."
Deesra glared at the other, biting back a blistering retort. If this mess was the con man's fault, he was going to nail him to the wall.
"May I inquire how something like this could happen?"
"Solo and Calrissian are combat veterans, highly experienced at survival,"
Thrawn said calmly.
"The security men they came up against were neither."
He shrugged, a subtle movement of shoulders beneath the white uniform.
"Actually, it was rather instructive, pointing up as it did some obvious deficiencies in Capital Security's training procedures. We'll have to remedy that."
"I'm sure they'll be delighted to have your input," Deesra said, looking over at the status board.
An overview of the city was currently displayed, along with the locations of all the Capital Security forces scattered around it.
"Wouldn't it make more sense to concentrate our surveillance on the spaceport? They're probably trying to get back to their ship."
"I'm sure they are," Thrawn agreed. "However, if they arrive to find a ring of stormtroopers blocking their path, they'll simply find an alternative way off Bastion."
"I suppose you're right," Deesra said reluctantly. Tyrce's argument, undoubtedly. Most likely his exact words, too. Deesra could practically hear the guardsman's characteristic inflections in the con man's voice.
"May I ask what you suggest we do, then?"
Thrawn turned his glowing red eyes toward the status board.
"The first step in catching a sentient prey is to think as he does," he said. Again, words that sounded straight out of Tyrce's mouth. "What was their mission here, and how did they intend to accomplish it?"
"How about sabotage?" Deesra gritted. "That sound like a likely mission?"
"No,"
Thrawn said firmly.
"They wouldn't send men like Solo and Calrissian in as saboteurs. Spies, perhaps, but not saboteurs."
"Admiral Thrawn," one of the troopers spoke up from his station. "I've got a partial back-check on the targets now. We've got a droid download that shows they've spent the past 3 days in the Imperial Library."
"Very good,"
Thrawn said, looking back at Deesra, his head tilted fractionally toward an unoccupied corner of the room.
"I'd like to speak with you for a moment, Admiral," Deesra said, picking up on the cue. "Privately, if I may?"
"Certainly, Your Excellency,"
Thrawn said, gesturing toward the corner.
"Let's step over here."
They crossed to the corner.
"Don't tell me. Let me guess,"
Deesra muttered, keeping his voice low.
"They're here after the Karmas document."
"What an amazing revelation, Your Excellency,"
Flim said, not quite sarcastically, his tone changing subtly out of his Thrawn character.
"The interesting part is that I've never heard of either Solo or Calrissian having anywhere near the slicing training for a job like that."
Deesra frowned. Getting past the con man's impertinence, he had a good point. A very good point. Deesra himself had worked his way into the Emperor's special files, but he'd had years to do it, and any number of experts to call on for advice along the way.
"Then the slicer must be the head implant who's with them," he suggested.
Flim's mouth puckered slightly.
No, I don't think so, he said. They didn't get a good enough look at him for a positive ID, but my guess is that that's Lobat, Carissian's old administrator from his pre-Endor days on Bespin. As far as I know, Lobat hasn't got any slicing expertise either.
He trailed off, his eyes suddenly narrowing.
What is it?
Deesra demanded.
There's a trick I heard about once,
Flim said slowly.
A slicing trick someone in the Fringe came up with a few years ago. Now, how did that work? No, be quiet a minute. Let me think.
For a dozen heartbeats, the only sound in the room was the murmur of background conversation as the men working their boards reported to each other new information as it came in, all of it negative. Deesra took deep breaths, concentrating on keeping a firm leash on his impatience. There were enemy spies loose in his city. And abruptly, Flim's eyes focused on him again.
Verpines, he said with a note of triumph in his tone. That was it. Verpines.
He took a half step past Deesra.
Lieutenant, start a wide-spectrum comm frequency scan, he ordered, his voice suddenly that of Thrawn again. Concentrate on Verpine biocom frequencies.
The lieutenant's eyebrows didn't even lift.
Yes, sir,
he said briskly, setting to work.
Wait a second,
Deesra said, almost grabbing at Flim's sleeve, and remembering just in time that that would be out of character.
Verpine biocom frequencies?
It's really an impressively cute trick,
Flim said, dropping his voice again to a level where only Deesra could hear.
You have a Verpine slicer sitting off in a hole somewhere, while a runner with an implant turned to his personal biocom frequency goes to the system you want to slice. With the data flow the implant can handle, the whole thing acts almost like a telepathic link. The Verpine sees through the implant's eyes and works the slicing on his own computer board, and the runner's fingers mimic his on the real system.
He turns him into a puppet, in other words,
Deesra bit out, his stomach twisting with distaste. For an alien to play a human being that way, even an implant who is no longer really human, was a vileness that bordered on the obscene.
Basically, Flim agreed casually, like I said, a real cute trick.
I'll take your word for it, Deesra growled.
Naturally, to a con man mired in the Fringe himself, such obscenities were probably just a commonplace way of life.
So what if they've shut the link down?
Flim shrugged, the same Thrawn-like gesture he'd used earlier. Out of earshot of the other troopers, he was still cagey enough to stay visually within his role.
Then we crump out, and we'll have to try something else.
Deesra looked over at the status board.
What if we try broadcasting on those biocom frequencies? He asked. Maybe tell the Verpine to start up their repulsor lifts or something. That would at least smoke out their ship for us.
We'd have to know how to encode a message into Verpine,
Flim said doubtfully.
I doubt we could find someone who could do it fast enough.
Couldn't a protocol droid handle the translation?
Not without a special module,
Flim told him.
Off-the-floor models don't usually come equipped to translate Verpine. Not enough call for it.
He stroked his lower lip thoughtfully.
On the other hand, if Lobot still got the link open from his end, we might be able to pick up a resonance echo if we hit the right frequency. That was something we used to have to worry about with our comlinks when we were running against some of the more sophisticated planetary patrol groups. If we can get a receiver close enough, and if we're lucky, we might be able to locate them.
Deesra felt his lip twist.
An awful lot of ifs in there.
I know, Flim conceded. But we've got to try something, and that's the best I can do right now.
He nodded toward the door.
Maybe you'd better get Tierspec up here. This is tactics, and he is our tactics expert.
And Pelion had had enough time alone with the man anyway.
I'll send him up, he said, heading toward the door. Keep me informed, Admiral.
With one final lurch, the turbolift car came to a halt.
This it?
Zothub's voice growled.
They expect so,
Control said as the door slid open.
Yes, this should be it.
Sir, which way?
One of the other pirates demanded. Easing her head to the side, Caroli lined up one eye with the crack still showing between the back doors. The pirates were half in and half out of the car now, Zothub standing in a narrow passageway outside, with his fists set on his hips, all of them looking back and forth both directions down a narrow corridor.
I don't know,
Control said, looking around once himself, then pointing to the left.
Let's try that way first.
Okay, Zothub said. Grinner, lock down the car. We don't want anyone coming up behind us.
Right,
Grinner said, doing something Caroli couldn't see with the control board.
Done.
The pirates disappeared out of sight to the left. Caroli gave them a five count. Then finding a toehold on the doorframe lip, she set her climbing claws into the crack between the doors and pried them open. She stepped into the car, and she was just starting to close the doors again when she heard the sound of footsteps in the corridor outside. The pirates were coming back. There was no time for anything but instinctive reaction. Putting her full strength into the effort, she pulled the doors to within a couple of centimeters of being closed. They hung up there, but there was no time for her to try to free them. Crossing the car in two quick strides, she squeezed herself as invisibly as she could into the front left-hand corner. Just in time, even as she pressed her climbing claws firmly against the car walls to avoid the telltale clink of metal on metal should they accidentally brush together, the footsteps reached her.
I don't see what the big deal is that he's got company,
Zothub was muttering as the first puff of air from their passage wafted in through the car opening.
Anyway, I only heard two voices in there.
That doesn't mean there aren't more,
Control said patiently as the group passed the open door and continued down the passageway.
Besides, if we're seen by the wrong people, this arrangement of ours goes straight down.
So what?
Zothub growled, his voice fading as they all continued down the corridor.
Cancelling the arrangement and Deesra is the whole idea, isn't it?
We ought to at least talk first,
Control said.
We might be able to recast the deal.
Hey, Grinner, you sure know your way around a control panel?
Another voice put in from the rear of the pack as the group continued on its way.
Did you know that when you lock the car down, you pop the back doors?
Caroli held her breath, but Grinner's response was a brief obscenity and an uninterrupted tread down the corridor. She gave them another five count, then pulling off the climbing claws and putting them away, she drew her blaster and headed out after them. She wasn't more than a few steps into the corridor when a subtle wave of air in her face warned her that somewhere ahead a door had opened. She picked up her pace a bit and came around a slight curve in the passageway just in time to see a rectangle of muted light close down to a sliver as the pirates closed a door down to a crack. Hurrying silently forward, she stopped at the door and eased her ear against the crack.
Fancy place,
she heard one of the pirates say, his tone a mixture of contempt and envy.
Look at this. Remordian silk sheets and everything. Maybe he'll give you a set for your bunk,
Zothub growled.
Where's the... Oh, there it is.
There was the soft sound of a chair being pulled back across a thick carpet. Caroli moved her eye around the crack, trying to see what was going on. But from her angle, all she could see was a small section of an elaborate wall hanging.
What are you going to do?
Control asked.
Put in a call to his office,
Zothop grunted.
Whoever he's caught in there, I figure he can tell them to wait.
I'm sorry, Admiral,
Major Tierce said, his fingertips rubbing nervously at the sides of his pant legs.
But with all due respect, I really don't know what you're talking about. I don't think I've ever been to Yaga Minor. If I have, it would have been as part of a training cruise when I was a cadet. Certainly not, what did you say, 6 weeks ago?
About that,
Pelion said, watching Tierce's face closely and wishing mightily that he had had enough evidence on him to order a full verity analysis. The man was lying through his teeth, that much Pelion was sure of. But until he could positively identify Tierce as the man who'd sliced into the Yaga Minor computer system, there was nothing else he could do. Or until that New Republic slicer Ghent found evidence of Tierce's tampering. That was a wild card neither Tierce nor Deesra knew about. Behind Pelion, the double doors swung open.
I apologize for the delay, Admiral, Deesra said, striding past Commander Drafe and around the side of the Ivroy desk. That will be all, Major, he added curtly to Tierce.
Yes, Your Excellency,
Tierce said. For the briefest instant, their eyes met, and Pelion thought he saw Deesra give his aide a microscopic nod. Then, moving with the air of a man trying to run from a group of Basaioths while still keeping some shreds of dignity, the Major crossed the office and escaped.
I trust Major Tierce was congenial company for you, Deesra commented.
Quite congenial,
Pelion assured him, studying that twisted face closely. Not so much a face as a mask, he thought, built to conceal the mind behind it. And he knew what was in that mind. The trouble was, he couldn't prove it. Not yet. But let him have one slip on Dietra's part. Just one.
Now, where were we? Deesra asked briskly, leaning back in his chair.
The short break had definitely done his confidence a mountain of good.
Oh, yes. Those unfounded and slanderous things other people have been saying about me. It's occurred to me, Admiral.
He broke off as the call signal sounded from his desktop comm. Scowling, he leaned forward again and jabbed the switch.
Yes, he barked. What is it?
He stiffened, his eyes widening momentarily, his jaw dropping a fraction of a centimeter. His eyes darted to Pelion, back to the comm display.
Yes, I'm busy, he growled. And I don't appreciate being interrupted this way for...
Abruptly he stopped. Pelion strained his ears, but the speaker was focused toward Deesra, and he could hear nothing from his position on the opposite side of the desk. And then Deesra's eyes widened again, and Pelion saw something he had never seen before. Something he had never expected to see. Moff Deesra, liar, conniver, and probable traitor, went white. Drafe saw it too.
Your Excellency?
He asked, standing up and starting around the side of the desk. The moment of shock passed, and Deesra's expression of stunted disbelief suddenly changed to that of a crazed rancor.
Back!
He snarled at Drafe, his hand slashing at him as if trying to ward away a dangerous animal.
I'm all right. Just stay back.
Drafe stopped, throwing a confused look at Pelion.
Is anything the matter, Your Excellency?
Pelion asked.
Everything's fine, Admiral, Deesra said,
the words coming out like they'd been sent through a grain grinder. His eyes, Pelion noted, were still fixed on the comm display.
If you'll excuse me again, there's another matter I need to attend to right away.
He stood up, keying off the comm with a vicious stab of his finger.
I'll be right back, he growled,
heading in a not-quite run toward the double doors.
Of course,
Pelion called after him.
Take whatever time you need.
The last words cut off by the boom as the doors closed behind him.
Well, that was interesting,
Drafe commented, looking at the doors and then back at Pelion.
Another trick to buy himself some breathing space.
I don't think either of these interruptions has been an act,
Pelion said, frowning thoughtfully at the Moff's desk. Historically, the majority of people who were able to afford culture-grown Evroy furniture were wealthy politicians, industrialists, and fringe crime lords, all of whom always had things to hide.
No, something's going on out there. Something important.
Drafe murmured. Shall I wander down the hall and see if I can find out what it is?
Maybe later,
Pelion said.
In the meantime, it seems we've been left alone in Deesra's office.
Drafe lifted his eyebrows in understanding.
Yes, we have, haven't we?
He agreed, looking around the office. His gaze fell on the desk.
Of course, it's a little dubious, legally, he reminded his superior,
throwing a sideways glance at the two troopers guarding the door.
We haven't got a search order, and Deesra hasn't been officially charged with anything.
I'll take the responsibility,
Pelion said.
Go ahead and see what you can find.
Yes, sir,
Drafe said, giving a tight smile as he circled around to the other side of the desk.
It'll be a pleasure.
Tierce was standing near the door as Deesra burst into the situation room.
We've got an echo,
the former guardsman murmured, a note of malicious satisfaction in his voice.
Once we triangulate in...
Zothip's here! Deesra cut him off. He's in my quarters!
Tierce's smile vanished.
How?
How in blazes should I know? Deesra shot back. But he's there. I recognized the furnishings when he called me in my office.
Tierce threw a look at the consoles, at Flim holding position again behind the lieutenant.
This just gets better and better,
he said darkly.
Did Pelion hear any of it?
I don't think so, Deesra said. That slinker of his, Drafe, started to come around the desk, but I don't think he could hear or see anything either.
Tierce hissed between his teeth.
We've got to get rid of him.
Brilliant tactical thinking, Deesra growled. You have any suggestions as to how? He didn't come alone, you know.
Tierce looked over at the consoles again.
I can't just walk out of here, he said. Solo and Calrissian are slippery. Until security actually has them in their sights...
We can't just leave Zothip resting his feet in there, either!
Deesra cut him off.
Don't you understand? He's in my quarters! That means he has clear passage to my office, where Admiral Pelion is!
Tierce looked sharply at him.
You left Pelion alone?
Of course he's alone! Deesra snapped. What was I supposed to do? Tell the outer door guards to go in and watch him?
That wouldn't have been such a bad idea,
Tierce retorted. He held up a hand.
All right. Let's take this in order. Pelion, I suppose he'll keep. Solo and Calrissian?
We've got a second biocom frequency echo, Admiral,
one of the troopers reported, looking up at Flim.
Security reports ready to move in as soon as we have a solid fix on the location.
Thank you,
Thrawn said, turning those glowing eyes toward the conversation by the door.
Continue the operation. Is there a problem, Your Excellency?
A small problem only, Admiral Thrawn.
Tierce spoke up before Deesra could answer.
But it may require a few minutes of your attention.
Certainly,
Flim said easily.
What are you doing?
Deesra hissed as the con man crossed the room toward them.
You aren't suggesting...
There are only two ways to deal with someone like Zothip,
Tierce said, his voice cold.
Kill him or scare him.
He nodded toward Flim.
Can you think of anything that could possibly scare him more than a Grand Admiral?
Flim had reached them in time to hear the last part.
Who are we trying to scare?
He asked.
Captain Zothip, Deesra said. He's in my quarters.
Flim's eyes widened, just noticeably.
He looked at Tierce.
You'll be fine,
the guardsman soothed him.
Zothip's in this for the profit, and you're our guarantee there will be profit. He's not going to risk hurting you.
Unless he's here for revenge, Flynn pointed out uneasily. For the job Pelliot did on him out at Pessatine, remember?
He'll forget all about that the minute he sees you,
Tears said impatiently.
At any rate, I'll be there with you. Whoever he's gotten there, I can handle them. You'll be fine.
What about Solo?
Flynn persisted, glancing back to the consoles. What if they lose him again?
How? Tears countered. We've picked up two Echoes. We know what part of the city they're in. They'll have them in restraints by the time we get back. Now let's go.
Flynn grimaced, but nodded.
Continue the operation, Lieutenant,
he ordered, half-turning his calm Thrawn voice, betraying none of his obvious nervousness.
I'll be back in a few minutes.
Tears gestured toward the door, and together the three of them headed out.
I don't know,
Flynn muttered, just loud enough for Deesra to hear.
I don't think I'm going to like this at all.
Their first warning was a sudden, subtle jerking motion from Lobot.
What is it?
Lando asked, peering at the other.
What is what?
Han asked from Lobot's other side.
He seemed to hesitate right there,
Lando said, pulling back the floppy-brimmed hat that had taken over the job of camouflaging Lobot's head implant and studying the tiny indicator lights there. The pattern wasn't the same one that had been showing the last time he looked.
Maybe he just stumbled,
Han said impatiently, looking around the crowds.
Come on, we gotta keep moving.
Hold on a minute,
Lando insisted, widening his examination to the suddenly introspective expression on Lobot's face. He knew the other far better than Han did, and it was clear to him that both the jerking movement and the other's strange look were indications that something odd was going on. Ignoring it would be just begging for trouble.
Lando!
Just a minute!
Lando cut him off. Abruptly, Lobot jerked a second time, the indicator lights again changing their pattern. They held the new array a moment, then changed back. And with a sudden hollow feeling in the pit of his stomach, Lando realized what had just happened.
They're doing a comm echo search, he told Han. Key to Verpine biocomm frequencies.
Terrific,
Han said, catching Lobot's arm to steady him and frowning under the brim at the implant.
They have the right frequency yet?
Doesn't look like it,
Lando said, looking around for inspiration. They were still a half hour away from the spaceport if they stayed on foot. A land speeder could get them there faster, but that would mean either hiring or stealing one. Each option carried its own set of risks. His eyes fell on a large, glistening sign over one of the shops just down the street. A sign bragging in large print about
hundreds of droids in stock, the best prices in the Empire, and everything on sale for one day only.
Come on,
he said, taking Lobot's other arm and pulling him toward the droid shop.
In here. I've got an idea.
They made it inside before the Imperial's frequency search hit the right one again.
What now?
Han muttered, looking around the wall-to-wall crowd of bargain hunters.
Over there,
Lando told him, shouldering his way toward an overhead sign marking the astromech droid section.
We need about a dozen R2 or R8 models.
No problem,
Han assured him, craning his neck to look over the mass of shoppers.
I see at least 20 of them. I hope you remember what our cash supply is like.
We're not gonna buy them, Lando said. All we're gonna do is talk to them.
They pushed their way through the crowd and into the astromech droid section, which was, not surprisingly, less densely populated than the servant and chef droid areas seemed to be.
Good afternoon, worthy citizens,
a silver-colored protocol droid said, stepping up to them.
I am C5MO, Human-Cyborg Relations. May I assist you in your selection?
Yes, thank you, Lando said.
We're looking for a droid that can serve as a long-range comm interface on certain very select frequencies.
I see, sir,
the droid said, half turning to gesture toward the lines of shiny, rounded cylinders behind him.
May I suggest something from either the R2 or R8 line? Both lines come with full-frequency comm systems as standard equipment.
Sounds good, Lando said, stepping toward the line of R8s. Do you mind if I give him a little test?
Of course not, sir. Feel free to administer any test you choose.
Thank you, Lando gestured to the first R8. You, first in line, I'd like you to transmit a multitonal signal on the following frequency.
He rattled off the number.
Next one, I'd like you to do different tones on a different frequency.
He supplied the number.
Just a moment, sir,
the protocol droid interrupted, sounding distressed.
I'm afraid you can't simply transmit unauthorized comm signals in the middle of the city.
One of the R8s twittered a short message.
No,
the protocol droid said, somewhat taken aback.
You're certain neither frequency is used here by anyone?
The R8 gave an affirmative warble.
I see. My apologies, sir. Please continue.
Lando continued down the line, giving each droid one of the major Verpine biocom frequencies to transmit on.
All right, he said when he had finished, turning back to the C5MO. Excellent. Now if you'll keep them transmitting, I'll go out to my land speeder and make sure they're holding the frequencies properly.
You wish to leave them transmitting?
The droid asked, starting to sound distressed again.
But sir,
you can't expect us to buy such a large order just on your word that they're transmitting correctly, can you?
Han put in.
Don't worry. One of our people will still be here.
He pointed across the way at a man in a dark green coat examining the line of servant droids.
He'll stay here until we get this checked out and get back to you, Lando added. You do extend corporate credit for orders of 20 or more, don't you?
Certainly, sir,
the droid said, brightening considerably.
You'll simply need to show your corporate authorization when you place your order.
Good,
Lando said, lifting his eyebrows at Han. The other took the hint, easing Lobot toward the nearest exit sign.
We'll be back in a few minutes.
2 minutes later, they were out on the street again.
Nice touch, that bit about leaving someone behind, Lando commented to Han. Should buy us a few more minutes before they start asking themselves awkward questions.
As long as they don't start a conversation with the guy anyway,
Han grunted.
So what's the plan? Straight back to the ship?
It was, Lando said. Unless you think it would be worth the time to be a little more devious than that.
I wonder,
Han said, rubbing his cheek.
Those droid transmissions ought to blanket any more echo searches, at least for now. But they did already have an idea where we were in the city. We can hop a cargo carrier. That would let us get around the spaceport and hit it from the other side.
If we don't get caught, Lando warned. They take a dim view around here of people riding cargo carriers.
It's worth the risk,
Han said, making it clear that he'd already made up his mind.
Come on. Nearest access is this way.
Chapter 22.
The conversation, or at least the part Caroli had been able to hear through the half-open door, had been short, sharp, and unpleasant. And very enlightening. The Kavrlu pirates, allied with the Empire? On one level, she supposed, it wasn't that much of a revelation. Particularly not after that overheard conversation between Solo and Calrissian. Imperials had been doing under-the-board business with the dregs of the Fringe for years, after all. From that accursed murderer Palpatine's cozy relationship with Prince Shizor on down. Now that the vast star-spanning empire had been reduced to a pitiful handful of sectors, all the more reason they would have to hire out some of their dirty work. But on another level, this was indeed something new. Sothep hadn't been talking to Moff Deesra as a hireling would to his master, but as a full equal. A very unhappy equal, moreover, if the pirate chief's tone and streams of invective were any indication. Even more interesting, given Zothip's veiled threats to go public, it would also appear that this arrangement was neither sanctioned by nor even known to the rest of the Imperial leadership. Karoli had originally followed Zothip with the idea of exacting revenge against the pirates for their part in the Laurardian slaughter 3 years ago. Now, she had stumbled on something far more interesting.
"You think he'll come?"
one of the pirates' voices intruded on Karoli's musings.
"Course he will," Zothip grunted. "You think he wants us announcing our deal on the old Bastion Com broadcast frequency?" "He won't be coming alone," Control's voice warned. "He'll have guards with him." "Not many of them," Zothip said. "There aren't a lot of people that Slug trusts."
"A hidden backup might still be a good idea,"
Control said, and Karoli could hear the verbal nudging in his tone.
"Just in case."
"Oh, all right,"
Zothip conceded with ill grace.
"Kranz, Porton, go back in the passageway. If I whistle, come out and kill everything that's not us."
There was a pair of acknowledgements and the sound of approaching footsteps. Moving with considerably less noise, Karoli retreated around the slight bend in the passageway. The dim light increased as the pirates pulled open the door, decreased again as they partially closed it down. And she now had a decision to make. Back here, 4 meters behind the two hidden pirates and their mutterings, she wouldn't be able to hear the upcoming conversation between Zothip and Deesra the way she'd like to. Moreover, the thought of even an Imperial Moff getting ambushed by the likes of the Kavarloo pirates did not sit well with her. She smiled tightly in the darkness at the irony of the situation. It was precisely the same thing Shada had objected to back on that windswept rooftop on Borkarash 5 weeks ago, and the reason Karoli was even here. But the deep philosophical considerations could wait until another day. In the meantime, the Kavarloo pirates owned a death debt to the Mistral, and the first installment would be collected right here and now. Putting her blaster away, Karoli drew a pair of slender knives and moved silently forward. Kranz and Porton crouched side by side behind the partially open door, whispering and chuckling to each other in grim anticipation of the carnage to come. Never even heard her coming. It was another minute's work to quietly drag the bodies a few meters back in the passageway, where they'd be out from underfoot. Then, returning to the partially open door, she crouched down and eased the tip of one of her knives along the thick carpet into the room. The image reflected in the metal was small and somewhat distorted, but Karoli had done this 1,000 times before and knew how to read it. As she'd expected, Zothip and his 3 remaining men were all facing the ornate door set into the right-hand wall. Zothip was seated rather arrogantly at the Moff's computer desk, the others slouched against walls or pieces of furniture at various other places around the room. All were fingering blaster butts or rubbing gun hands in preparation. All were well clear of her line of fire and the ambush they still thought was set up. She was just working through her likely attack plan, should it come to that, when there was the soft click of a lock from across the room. Instantly, the pirate's muttered conversation ceased. The door swung open, and 2 men stepped inside. The one on the right was Moff Deesra. That much was obvious, from his age and his robe of office, and the arrogant hauteur with which he strode into the room. The second man, on Deesra's right, dressed in an Imperial uniform, Karoli felt her breath catch in her throat, an unpleasant tingling on the back of her neck. The second man was a warrior. Not a soldier, a warrior. She could see it in his stance, in his walk, in the way he held his hands, and the way his eyes took in the situation in front of him. Control had warned that Deesra would bring guards with him. Dimly, Karoli wondered if any of the pirates was capable of recognizing the warrior beneath the uniform. Zothip himself apparently could not.
"Took your own sweet time getting here,"
he growled as the warrior swung the door closed.
"Who's the nerf?"
"Get out of my chair,"
Deesra growled back, ignoring the question and gesturing irritably at the lounging pirate chief.
"I'm doing the talking here, Deesra,"
Zothip said, making no move to vacate the chair.
"Wait a minute. I know you,"
he added, leveling a finger at the warrior.
"Yeah, you're the snotter who pulled all my advisors out on me, you rotten, rark-eating soldler."
Karoli winced, half expecting sudden death to be the warrior's response to the insult. But he wasn't so easily provoked.
"That's right," he said, his voice glacially calm. "I'm Major Tierce, and as I explained at the time, the Empire had a more pressing need for their services."
"So you just up and pulled them, huh?"
Zothip countered, his voice darkening.
"Well, maybe that's how you Imperial dreg sifters do things, but that's not how it's done in the Fringe. You make a deal, you stick with it."
He leveled his finger again.
"Or you get to spend your last couple of minutes of life regretting it."
"I thought in the Fringe you also didn't lose your nerve," Deesra put in disdainfully. "Did Pelion scare you that badly?"
"Never mind Pelion,"
Zothip bit out.
"I'll deal with him later. Right now, you're the one in the hot circle. Starting with full compensation for my battlecruiser and the 800 men who died with it."
"Apparently he has lost his nerve, Your Excellency,"
Tears said.
"The Sabacc pot's grown too big for his taste, and he wants out."
Zothip snorted.
"Words. That's all it is with you, Deesra. Words and promises, and we end up doing all the work and all the dying. But not anymore. I figure 20 million ought to cover it for..."
"Suppose we can show you we have more than words,"
Tierce interrupted, an edge of challenge to his voice.
"Suppose we can give you proof that the Empire is once again on the rise, and that this time there will be no stopping us. Would you still want to quit?"
Zothip laughed, a thoroughly humorless sound.
"Proof, huh? If you think anything you've got, can..."
He broke off, as behind Deesra and Tierce, the door again swung open. One of the pirates half drew his blaster.
"Good afternoon, Captain Zothip,"
the white uniformed figure said calmly as he stepped into the room.
"Permit me to introduce myself. I'm Grand Admiral Thrawn."
It took Commander Drafe less than a minute to locate the secret drawer hidden away beneath the Evroy desk's writing surface. It took only 2 minutes longer, with the help of some rather illegal tools, for him to force it open. Inside were 8 data cards. 3 of them carried the labels of official governmental briefings, one from the Ubiquitrate, the other 2 from Fleet Intelligence. But the other 5...
"Make copies of them,"
Pelion ordered, as Drafe slid one of the unlabeled data cards into his data pad.
"All of them, even the official ones. We'll see what the Chimera's decrypt section can do with them."
"Let me try something first, if I may, sir,"
Drafe said, pulling a data card from his pocket and inserting it into his data pad's auxiliary slot.
"One of the little extras that fell out of my back check of Lord Greyman's finances was the encrypt he was using to communicate back to Bastion. Let's see if Deesra was careless or overconfident enough to use the same one here. Ah, well, well. Our clever little moth seems to have missed a bet."
He smiled tightly at Pelion.
"It's here, Admiral. It's all here."
Pelion stepped to his side and looked over his shoulder. It was there, all right. Names, dates, amounts, details of the various transactions, everything.
You'll be able to link this with Grayman's end of the operation?
He asked.
Easily, Drafe assured him, still scrolling through the files. Deethra was even kind enough to supply dates on everything. All I really need to do...
Wait!
Pellion cut him off, slapping fingertips at the other's arm. Something had caught his eye as it went past.
Back up a few files. Try one more. One more.
And there it was. The name Pellion had spotted going past. The name, current location, imprisonment order.
Colonel Mesh Vermel,
Drafe read, frowning.
Isn't he one of your aides, Admiral?
He is indeed,
Pellion said. His satisfaction with the catch they'd just made, vanishing suddenly into the haze of dark fury.
He vanished while on special mission for me.
Did he now?
Drafe said, his own voice darkening.
So Deesra's branched out into kidnapping now, has he?
Only on special occasions,
Pellion said, looking at the hidden drawer. Drafe had done an efficient job of forcing the lock, but there was no way the damage could be covered up. The minute Deesra opened the drawer again, he would know someone had been in there. And Pellion came to a decision.
Never mind copying them,
he said, gathering up the data cards.
We'll take the originals.
Drafe blinked.
Sir, but...
And we're leaving,
Pellion added, looking over at one of the troopers guarding the door.
Signal the Chimera,
he ordered.
Captain Arniff is to prepare for departure as soon as I'm aboard. Then call Lieutenant Martian at the shuttle and tell him we're on our way.
Yes, sir.
The trooper pulled out his comlink.
What about Deesra?
Drafe asked.
We haven't settled with him yet.
Deesra will keep,
Pellion said grimly.
Right now, my main concern is to get Vermel free before Deesra decides he's a liability.
You'll be going yourself?
Yes,
Pellion said, sliding the hidden drawer closed.
Depending on how Deesra set up the imprisonment order, it may take my personal authority as Supreme Commander to get him out. Besides, at this point I don't trust anyone off the Chimera not to be in Deesra's pocket.
Or in Thrawn's,
Drafe murmured. Pellion grimaced.
If Thrawn is indeed alive,
he said.
Regardless, I'm going.
It could be tricky,
Drafe warned, dropping into step beside Pellion as they headed for the double doors.
Rimsey Station is a couple of days' flight away. Deesra's certainly going to miss these data cards before then.
Don't worry. I have a few tricks of my own available,
Pellion said.
Trooper?
Lieutenant Martian reports the shuttle will be ready to fly when we arrive, sir,
the trooper reported.
Captain Artif reports likewise for the Chimera.
Good,
Pellion said, motioning the troopers to open the doors.
Then let's not keep them waiting.
For a few seconds, the room was utterly quiet. The silence of a cave, or a forest, or a tomb. Deesra let the stillness linger, thoroughly enjoying the look of stunned disbelief on Zothib's face. It was high time the cocky, slime-eating pirate ran face-first into something his noise and bluster couldn't handle. He would have liked to see the consternation last a little longer, but for reasons known only to himself, the con man chose to break the spell.
You seem surprised by my presence here,
he said, his smooth, Thrawn voice as absolutely perfect as the silence had been.
I can only conclude you haven't been paying attention to the news coming out of Coruscant.
For a moment, Zothib's mouth worked silently, the movement amplified grotesquely by the bushy beard before he finally found his voice.
No, I heard you were back,
he said at last, the words coming out with some difficulty. The sound of his voice seemed to embolden him.
I just didn't believe it, that's all,
he added, straightening his shoulders.
Why not?
Sothep's eyes darted to one of his men, as if reassuring him that he was the one in control here.
because I figured anyone who'd gotten away from this slime hole of an empire wouldn't be stupid enough to come back,
he said, his voice suddenly aggressive again. On Thrawn's other side, tears stirred.